Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hard to believe, but we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Robert Kennedy, his death on June 6th. And joining us now is an author of a book that has been as a brand new edition, one you may have enjoyed 25 years ago. Joining us now is Rick Allen. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Pleasure to be here.
The book is RFK, His Words for Our Times. So 25 years ago, you looked at how his thoughts, his beliefs would have applied to America at that point. We're another 25 years past that, so 50 years in total. How does the thoughts and words of RFK apply to today's America?
Well, it's a great question, Ryan, and it was the real reason for putting out this new edition. Obviously, 50th anniversary is the kind of date that gives Americans a reason to think about their history. But what was more important for me over the last year plus working on this book was how relevant and beautiful Robert Kennedy's words are, how much they speak to us in our time, which is as fractured and painful as 1968 was, the final year of his life, mm-hmm. and how important I felt it was to hear Kennedy's words directly from him, as it were, not mediated by biographers, even though there are wonderful biographies out on Kennedy. Mm-hmm. But this is an opportunity to read the principal public remarks over the course of his career, to see them in context. We've got contextual material around each of them, and also to read reflections of world leaders. We have some 30 of them, 5 Nobel Peace Prize winners, 4 presidents, the winner of 22 Grammys, a number of really interesting people commenting on Kennedy's impact on them personally and on the world.
Historical context of his speeches 50 years ago to today, it was a different world. I mean, the world always changes, I guess, year after year, but it seems like now it changes even faster. So what are some of those things that you found in his speeches that you were able to put in context with 50 years ago that still stand up to today?
Well, I think quite a number. First, the issues are very much the same. The issues of opportunities for good, well-paying jobs, poverty, race, the struggles of war and peace, all of those are the same principal issues that we face today. Robert Kennedy had a very different approach than the way politics is frequently engaged in our era. And I think that he consistently was doing what I'll call kind of the politics of elevation. Mm-hmm. He was elevating our definition of patriotism to mean a constant improvement in ourselves and in our country, not some kind of blind allegiance to the notion that we've made a perfect union. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a major change, but it's a response to the same question. Mm-hmm. I think also Kennedy spoke very consistently about mm-hmm. our expectations on ourselves as citizens, activist, relentless, practical, principled, all of those things. He said, for example, at the University of Alabama in 1968, he was calling on his audience to join him in the task of national reconciliation. He said, to place your energies and your time and strength in the first work of America, the building of a nation united not on every issue, but in the enduring faith that we are to be free, that we have the chance for a decent life, that the natural condition of humanity is not degradation, but dignity. Hmm. That is the faith that binds us together as Americans.
Wow. Wonderfully said. So 50 years ago, Rick, I don't know how old you are, but do you remember when this happened?
I do. I was a teenager. I just turned 14. Mm-hmm. We were living outside of New York at the time. I was volunteering on his campaign. The New York primary was to follow the California primary, mm-hmm. which he won, and it was that evening that he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. So I was I had snuck my radio, transistor radio, under my pillow because it was so important that the California primary was a victory. So I was listening to those events live, which was really a difficult experience, as you can imagine. But it is something that I've thought about his death, obviously, quite a bit. But the more important point for me has always been his life. Mm-hmm. We have three kids. I have a 2-year-old granddaughter. Mm. And when I was a kid, I was certain that I was going to have a better life than my parents had had, and that I'd leave my kids and grandkids a better world for them to grow up in. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we feel that way now. And I think that that is something important for Americans to recapture.
Yeah. Rick Allen, author of RFK, His Words for Our Times. Hard to believe we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's assassination. That's on June 6th. I always wondered, when you started to research the family, how was Robert Kennedy similar and different from his other family members?
Well, it's a really big family. He was one of 9 children, and he and Ethel Kennedy had 11 children. So there are an awful lot of Kennedys to compare to. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to know most of Robert and Ethel Kennedy's children for, gosh, half my life, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they're quite extraordinary. But Robert Kennedy was closest to his brother John, to the president. It's been said that there have never been 2 people in the White House, one president and one a senior counselor. Robert Kennedy was the attorney general under his brother. There hasn't been a pair like that in American history.
Yeah.
And they really did operate together. But President Kennedy was the outside guy. He was the politician, the person running for office. Robert Kennedy was his campaign manager. And while he frequently spoke on behalf of his brother, he really didn't feel comfortable with public speaking.
Hmm.
So they had a fantastic duo because their desires, their skills, their personalities were complementary.
Wow.
And it really was only after the murder of President Kennedy that Robert Kennedy, after a period of incredibly deep grieving, decided that the best way for him to fulfill what he thought was his responsibility to the country and to the memory of his brother was to rise himself as an elected official. And so it was kind of fierceness of will that led him to develop the skills necessary to be an elected official, somebody running for office. He served in the Senate and then ran for president. Mm-hmm. And it was by no means his first choice, mm-hmm. but it was something he did with excellence, which is the way he approached everything in life.
Yeah. You know, the book coming out today, RFK, His Words for Our Times, and Rick Allen, how are you at public speaking? Are you someone that can go up there and get a crowd going?
I love speaking in public.
Yeah.
I always have, but it's something... It's like any other muscle group, right? You got to practice all the time. You're involved in athletics. You've seen what that means. Public speaking is much the same, and the more you get a chance to get out there and do it, the better you are at it. When I was in the Clinton administration, I had a lot of opportunities to speak, and so it was easier then. I don't get quite the number of opportunities now, so I think my skill level slipped a little bit.
It was another one of those "where were you" moments. 50 years ago, on June 6th, was the assassination of Robert Kennedy. In the book that's out today, RFK, His Words for Our Times, author Rick Allen has a brand new edition of this book looking back at how some of the speeches apply over the test of time over the last 50 years. We're going to continue our conversation with Rick coming up next here on Overnight America KMOX.
Ryan Recker, Overnight America, the two best things in your night on KMOX.
Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It was on June 6th, 50 years ago, that Robert Kennedy was assassinated. The book that Rick Allen has wrote, a brand new edition of it's out, is called RFK, His Words for Our Times. It's a look back at some select speeches of relevance that endure the test of time and a reminder today of some certain common aspirations that can unify America. We continue with author Rick Allen. Are you going to be doing anything on C-SPAN? Because this is something I would normally see on it, where you're talking about your book and taking calls.
Well, I hope I get the chance to do that. We've actually got a book event in Washington, D.C. Thursday night, and I've asked Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, who is the former lieutenant governor of Maryland and is Robert and Ethel Kennedy's eldest child, to join me as kind of a guest of honor for that event. And there is a possibility that C-SPAN will be filming that evening, Thursday night.
That would be great. I really hope they do.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most remembered moments of his time in his speeches was right after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And it goes to show you just his character and leadership at a time like that. What are some of your takeaways at that time in Indianapolis?
Well, that was of incredible importance. And when I talk about the contextual material around the speeches, that's one particular chapter that I'm proudest of, because the story itself really is incredible. Kennedy coming to a impoverished, largely African-American area in Indianapolis, coming to a political rally against the wishes and really almost the instructions of the mayor and the police chief, who said, "We cannot protect you if you go to this event." And in fact, they pulled off the police coverage.
Wow.
Kennedy went ahead. This was not the time of 24-hour news channels, not cell phones. So the folks in that crowd, he knew, were unaware that their hero, Dr. Martin Luther King, had been shot and killed. But Kennedy knew, and he had to carry that message to that crowd. So his young advance man, John Lewis, now the congressman, who was already then a civil rights hero, recommended to Senator Kennedy that he kept that date and went in to meet with that audience. And the speech that you've mentioned was entirely extemporaneous. And it's powerful, lyrical, and beautiful. And there's language in there that we just would not hear from a modern politician. He quoted the Greek tragedian Aeschylus. And I defy you to find one politician of either party who would come in to a community, particularly a troubled one, and quote Aeschylus. But Robert Kennedy always spoke up. He took his audience very, very seriously and his responsibility. And the impact of that speech was exceptionally powerful.
Yeah.
That night in America, 110 cities had riots of one level or another. 26 people were killed. It was a horrible, horrible night of rage and depression and frustration. And Indianapolis was unique among large cities in having none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Kennedy's speech is largely credited for that result.
Yeah. RFK, his words for our times, and author Rick Allen joins us here on KMOX. Have you ever sat back and thought, if he were to give a speech in 2018, what he would say?
Well, I know the themes, because, again, what we're covering in this book are topics that are so relevant for us today. And I think I also know the speaking style. There are elected officials today who believe that they have to drop the level of discourse down to, as we've heard from some experts, sixth grade reading levels. That just wasn't the way Robert Kennedy believed that leadership was exhibited, and he didn't think that that did a service to the audience that he was speaking to. So he would have, I believe, even in this different time and era, tried to keep the reflections of ideals, the policies he enunciated, and even the way that he practiced politics. I think he would have kept it very similarly to the way he ran for president in 1968.
Wow. So the book is out now. It's RFK, His Words for Our Times. It's a brand new edition. You, about 25 years ago, looked back at his life and legacy. Now it's 50 years since his assassination, which happened on June 6th. Where can people find your book?
Pretty much everywhere. We are on sale in stores today. I just saw on Amazon that we actually were the number one new release in a number of categories.
Right.
So we're both online and in stores. And I appreciate the chance to speak with you and reach out to your listeners, and I hope that they'll have the opportunity to pick up the book, and I'll be interested in what they think. Mm-hmm. Our book's website is rfkspeeches.com,
mm-hmm.
and there are video and audio excerpts of Kennedy. There are blog posts with excerpts from the book, and there's a way to get in contact with me on that site as well.
The 50th anniversary, Robert Kennedy's assassination happening on June 6th, and the book is RFK, His Words for Our Times, author Rick Allen. Thank you for sharing some thoughts with us of, I guess, where we sit today, where we sat 50 years ago, some of the ways that America can come back together, and the messages that are eternal and beautiful of Robert Kennedy. Thank you so much, Rick Allen, for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you, Ryan. It's been a pleasure.
You can check that out on the podcast page at KMOX.com. We'll be putting it up with all of our other podcasts. Anything we do on the show, you're able to go back and listen to if you missed it. And I love that sort of thing. Make it shareable online. You can go on and share that sort of thing. We just had our first 10,000 download month last month. So I'm pretty happy about that. 10,000 downloads of the podcast last month. So the show continues to grow online thanks to you. And just look up Overnight America on your podcast app. You can subscribe to it and get updates and download the latest shows that way. So I wanted to know if you've ever tried an online dating service and what was the result, because Facebook is going to be getting into the game. Was it good? Was it bad? Did you have the best experience, the worst experience? Did you show up and your date looked nothing like the photo? I just want to know what that experience was like for you. And we're going to talk about Facebook launching their service coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
Local news from St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather station, KMOX.
If you have tried an online dating service, I want to know what your experience was with it. Was it good? Was it bad? What was it? 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. Really, what I'm interested in is learning about what happened when you met the person in real life. Was it what you expected, or was it, I don't know, a huge letdown? Was the person crazy? Was the person fun? Are you married to that person? You know, there's so many possibilities there. I just want to know what happened. 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120 is the phone number here for Overnight America. Facebook is going to be launching a dating service. So they're going to throw their hat into the next frontier for them. They already do a lot of different things. I mean, it's Facebook. So here's the AP story out of New York. They got real, I don't want to use the word colorful with it. They probably got a little too, I don't know. It's just the way they wrote this article was, I guess colorful might be the right word. Facebook doesn't think hookups are meaningful and doesn't want you to date your friends. At least that's the takeaway from a new dating feature. And social networking giant is launching because, well, why not? Okay, they're getting cute. Maybe that's the right word. This article's getting a little too cute. So after all, Facebook already lets you poke people. No one's going around poking people, are they? I haven't got poked on Facebook in so long. That is, again, it just doesn't sound right saying that out loud. Do they even have that feature anymore? They do? That's weird. I'm glad people don't do it. It's probably one of those best to bury features. But what they're doing, Mark Zuckerberg said the new dating feature is not just for hookups, to build meaningful long-term relationships. So what they're doing is basically trying to go a little slap across the face to apps like Tinder, which a lot of the young are putting onto their phones. And the idea of Tinder is you look, and if you are attracted to that person or you think they're good looking or you have some sort of common traits or whatever, there's a small profile. It allows you to open up a texting dialogue with that person, and then you can decide if you want to meet in real life or not. But Tinder is notorious for what they say hookups, which is people meeting just for physical touch, put it that way. Match.com is a really big site. Tinder is a big site. They also have stock options, and apparently their shares went down on the news that they're going to have a new competitor in Facebook. I don't know what Facebook's going to be able to offer. People are already upset with them that they can't keep private information private, right? I mean, if you don't trust them, then why would you start to open this dialogue with this sort of thing? Like Clavin just messaged in, this is dumb. Facebook won't even let me do that. Wait, threaten half the people I share no mutual connection without challenging me. But now there they go. They will going to let me date someone. Oh, I see. Okay, so Clavin's basically saying, you know, Facebook shuts you down for saying anything. And if you're a conservative, for example, and you talk about, oh, I don't know, gun rights or something, next thing you know, you're in the Facebook prison. So what are they going to do in trying on their app? Are they going to be able to do the same thing? Are they just going to put you in dating prison if you post something up that they don't like? I don't know. But Facebook dating profile will be separate from your regular Facebook profile. It won't suggest your friends as people you may want to date. Zuckerberg said the dating feature was built with privacy and security in mind from the start. How terrible is that? They have to specifically point out the fact that they're going to, oh, I don't know, take security seriously this time around. That's how far along we are with these tech companies. Zuckerberg said the dating feature, there are some online rumblings that the dating feature might be open only to people who list themselves as single and not those who are married or in a relationship, ignoring the subset of people who are in a non-monogamous relationship. After setting up a dating profile, you can browse events in groups based on locations and interest. After you unlock an event attending or considering going, you can view the profiles of others who have unlocked that event. So they want it to have a social aspect where you actually have to go out and meet these people in social settings. So these events, for example, like here's a meetup at this bar from everyone that's on this dating app, and then you get to see the other people there, so you can kind of do some, I guess, research. They just call it stalking where I come from. You're just going to go and stalk the people that you're going to be in the same room as. Maybe it's not a bad thing that they encourage people to meet in public settings along with other people that are in the game, meaning that they are like-minded in the sense that they're looking for relationships. So it's kind of like speed dating in a way, except that it's a free-range speed dating. That's one of the features on this Facebook thing. You know, it's got to be better than Tinder. I don't know. Do people legitimately use Tinder as a dating app alternative to like a Match.com or a, I forgot what the other one was. Who's that dude, that old guy that goes on, he's like, these really, they make it into a scientific study for them. Who's that guy? It's not Match.com. It's the other one. eHarmony. That's it, eHarmony. So what happens next? These other sites How are they going to differentiate from it? Is Facebook going to catch on? Yeah, probably, because it's Facebook and people use it still. They have all those different users built into it. It's going to be successful. You know, if you are someone that likes the virtual world and you don't want to meet people in real life because you're afraid, you know, I'm just going to tell you that your insecurities, other people feel them too. The things you're into, there's other people that are into those things too. Don't feel like you are alone in anything in your life. There's other people out there. You just have to go find them. And sometimes it seems like it's a very difficult first step to take. You just grow a little confidence and go out there and do it. And you listen, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You don't have to worry about being embarrassed because it didn't work out. You just move on to something different. You know, sometimes it's hard to get hooked onto something, hooked onto the idea that who you're talking to online is going to be the person of your dreams, and then it turns out to be a disappointment and it's heartbreak. That's just the way dating goes, man. Do you use any of those dating sites? I'm just asking. The producer's like, don't even talk to me about it. It's like, leave me out of this. When I was in college, dating sites were still like, who does those? Like, it was kind of taboo. It hasn't always been publicly celebrated like it is now, where everyone's like, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago or something like that. It was like, if you met a person on the internet, you're not telling them that. You're coming up with a cover story because you're ashamed about it. You're like, who does that? That's a weird thing, right? You're not going out and meeting people face to face. But today it's like, that's where everyone meets. They're skipping the scenes where they're trying to meet in person. They're trying to stalk each other as much as possible. And then when they meet each other, I want to talk to people that have actually met face to face with a date for the first time after being on one of these dating sites. How did that go? 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. I will admit, like, back when I was in Ohio, well before I met my wife, we had at the radio station someone that worked there that put me on one of these dating sites. I didn't want to do it, but they did it, and I just didn't participate in it. But to me, it was like, it still felt weird to me then, but it's like not weird anymore. Just the way technology goes. And even if you're in a relationship, maybe the next step is to do a virtual wedding. You can put on those virtual reality glasses, get it all married that way. There's a company called VR Weddings. So what they do is they try to save that moment of yours in virtual reality land so you can go back and revisit it. My wife always tries to get me to watch our DVD of the wedding. She wants me to pull it out and we can just like, oh, look, here's so-and-so. Oh, look, here's down there. Oh, I remember when they played this song. And it's, to me, boring. I don't want to rewatch the wedding tape. Ugh. But she's all into it. I don't know if I think we've only sat down and watched it once. I need to surprise her. I don't even know where it's at anymore. But if it's virtual reality, I don't think guys would still be inclined to want to do it. Like, they would they really feel like, oh, this is a way to get them more interested in rewatching it? But new technology means you can relive your special day over and over and over again. The company is based in Ireland, but it looks like they're going to be expanding. They say, imagine being able to re-experience the best day of your life, witness the reactions of close relatives that you may not have seen on the day, share the experience with relatives, and share loved ones who may not have been able to make it to the wedding. The basic package includes a client manager, production meeting, someone there to record it, post-production, and a YouTube link. In case you wanted other people to watch it. I have one of those, like, makeshift poor man's version of the virtual reality goggles. You can buy the framework for them. So it's just something you strap onto your head. It doesn't actually have a screen on it or anything like that. But what you do is you use your mobile phone, your smartphone, and you put it into it. And then you press a button on your mobile phone because there's videos that are on, like, YouTube that enable the 360 view. You press the button. You plop your phone into the little headset, and then you look around, and it's like you have a virtual reality helmet on. It's kind of the makeshift way of doing it, but it's becoming more and more popular. I can see why people would want to do that sort of thing. There's like live concerts. There's different apps that act that way, and even video games are starting to act that way. And you want to know the crazy thing is? Technology, the way it's moving, they're continuing to invest in it. It's becoming more popular, but people are still like, you know, every time they try it on, they're saying, man, my eyes hurt. I'm not feeling good. My body is just not meant to do this long term. So there are some pretty big shortfalls that the technology will have to overcome. I don't know if people being able to witness this in this course of a wedding will be enough for them to want to do this sort of thing. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to show grandma, oh, it was such a beautiful wedding, pop on this helmet, and then next thing you know, you're passed out because, you know, you had an issue staring at these things too long. Your eyeballs started to hurt. I just don't see this. There's so much strain when it comes to these things. Sitting through an entire ceremony like a wedding, just to me, seems like it's tough. But virtual, man, that's what people are doing. Next thing you know, people are only going to be married virtually. They're not even going to meet in person. They're just all going to be virtual bride and grooms. What a way to skip the disappointment side altogether. All right, so I want you to be honest, too. Facebook was testing out a button today, accidentally launched it. It's a button that I don't think is going to work. If you've done online dating, I would love to hear your experience, but I want to talk more Facebook coming up, too. 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120. What was your experience like online dating? Please, there's got to be some good stories out there. This is Overnight America, KMOX. I'm looking up some online dating horror stories. Oh, these are awesome. So here's one. My college roommate was texting with someone she met at a coffee meets bagel. I think that's another dating website, isn't it? Coffee meets bagel. When the conversation turned sketchy, the guy found out they lived in the same area of Fort Lauderdale, and he had a lot of follow-up questions like, what street do you live on, and do you live alone? Oh, no. That's when you feel trapped. It's like this guy's already in too deep. That sounds terrible. They're San Francisco-based? Dating, what's it called? It's called Coffee Meets Bagel. What's the significance of that? It's just like meeting up for coffee and bagels, I guess. Another one was talking about how Allison's is a single New Yorker, which means it's a pretty rough lady. However, one extremely rude first date left her reeling and wondering what went wrong. She met a guy, ordered drinks. When the beer arrived, he paid for it, downed it, and ended the date before it actually begun. It was ego crushing, she said. Which is a little bit weird. Maybe the person was nervous. There's got to be some really good online dating stories out there. I feel like I'm prying into people's lives, but it's just so fun to hear these sort of things. This one was, he showed his sword collection on the first date. Here's my sword collection. Now that is a bold move. If you're going to be showing off the whatever collection that you have in private, you're like, you know, I'm going for gold here. I know that this is going to be a make or break situation. I want someone that's going to admire my sword collection for what it is. So we better find out very quick if they don't like that sort of thing. Here's another one. Every dating site is bound to have a few bad apples. Scammers flock to places where they can chat anonymously. Reputable dating platforms will hopefully verify and stop some of these scammers. They'll use photos to verify links, and then they'll get you to try to do things like, I'll send pictures of yourself or money or something their way. You need to watch out for some of these scams on there, too. It seems like whenever there's bad guys, there's going to be people taking advantage of these different platforms. Always, always, always drive yourself to a first date, they say. This should be a no-brainer. When you meet online, do not get in a car with them until you've established some sort of trust level. You don't have to be paranoid that much online, but then again, if you want to be able to leave, you should be able to do it on your own accord, right? That's probably a good one. Oh, Bay calling in. Did you say Bay? Is that how you pronounce your name?
No, B.
B, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, many years ago, Jim White had a dating program on.
Really? What would he do?
He would have people to call in and talk about themselves.
Uh-huh.
And they would take your number, and if someone was interested, they would end up getting in touch with you. And he had that on for a couple of years.
Oh, like the old, the way they used to handle those was you would go into a service, they would do a videotape recording of you, and then another person would watch those tapes, and if they had interest, they would try to connect them like that? I
think
that's how it worked. The only reason I know that is because there used to be these old sketches in the 90s of people using those services.
You know, I forgot, because that was like 1980, 1982.
Yeah. B, did you ever call in?
Oh, yeah. I met a few nice people.
Really? So you called in to Jim White's program. You talked about yourself, and then these guys would call in to Jim wanting to be connected with you?
Yeah, they'd be different people all night. And you would listen to the one that was that you thought you would have an interest in.
So you would call in, and then he would air the other people on air, too, and then you would have a choice? Or they would choose you? How did it work?
They would choose you. Or
so you,
I would choose them. If there was someone there that I thought I would be interested in.
So you went on a few dates. What was that like meeting up with someone that you met on air at KMOX?
They turned out nice, but it's a little scary.
I bet it was. Where did the person take you out on the date?
I believe at that time, I think it was like a movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and go somewhere and get a hamburger.
No, okay, so do you remember where?
No, I don't.
All right, so you didn't end up marrying any of these people, did you?
Oh, no, but boy, you can meet some nice people.
And you did. How many dates did you go on?
Two or three.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
How many years did Jim White do this thing for?
I think he did it for a couple years.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. Do you think people would still want to do that sort of thing?
You know, I don't know. They might.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because the way dating works where you can just have an app, people just go and do it straightforward. They don't want to do this. It's like the availability is so open anymore for people to do it other ways.
Well, it's nice because you don't want to go around a bar or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a pretty nice way to meet somebody.
All right, B. Thank you for sharing that. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, B went on three or four dates. That's a pretty cool story. That's cool. That's a good Jim White bit. Now, KMOX, this reaches all over the place. You know, she probably was attracting people from all over. They just weren't in the St. Louis region to take advantage of it. And of course, two or three, you don't remember where you go, I guess. Dates. I'm so glad I'm not in the dating realm anymore. That is the worst. Oh, man. I'm so glad I'm married. I'm glad I don't have to deal with this sort of thing anymore. I'm glad I don't have to put up with it. It was not a fun time. Are you dating anyone? Okay, you say no. You know what, man? I am not envious of you. It is not an easy thing to do anymore. Everything's complicated. You know, there was something else that happened on Facebook earlier today, not just the announcement that they're going to be launching a dating service, but they accidentally started what they call a hate speech button. So if you logged in, you may have actually seen this, where some posts that were online had a little, I don't know if it was a banner or a disclaimer underneath the post, and it allowed you to press a button. So if you saw something and it said, "Does this post contain hate speech?" there's a yes or no button underneath it. The vice president of Facebook, Guy Rosen, explained on Twitter that the button was shown on posts regardless of their content, but was reverted within 20 minutes. It accidentally was unlocked. It wasn't supposed to unlock that way. It was supposed to be just an internal test. And they're trying to figure out how to get more people active, I guess, in reporting this sort of thing. They already have ways to report hate speech. I don't like this sort of thing, this little hate speech button, because I don't think it works. I think it's dumb, number one. Because why? If people disagree with it, they're just going to click yes. It doesn't mean it's hate speech. It just means it's something they disagree with. So people are going to abuse it, number one. Number two, the users of Facebook shouldn't be doing the job of what Facebook is required to do. So they shouldn't have to force the people in order to keep them compliant with some of these new regulations that are going to come up in order to keep them on the up and up when it comes to things like this, dangerous things that are being posted on their platform. So they're trying to shift the burden on the people, and people are going to abuse it. They're not going to use it responsibly or honestly, and they're going to use it as a way to try to punish people they disagree with. That's just the motto of Facebook. You know, if you disagree, hey, you know what? You're hate speech now. So I don't like these things. I don't think these things work. I think they're counterproductive. Facebook recently came under fire. Many critics say they have hate speech all over the place. And, you know, other countries defined it certain ways. Like what we constitute as hate speech here in the United States is a lot different than if you go to some very, very, I guess, countries like, you know, France, for example, or very liberal places, I should say, or some really hard-leaning places like Saudi Arabia, for example. All right. Overnight America continues. We've got this thing called Tell Me Something Good. Let's talk about some good things coming up next.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.